So the game we're talking about today is Curse 2 Golf, which features a guy who really likes golf, like favorite thing in the world, and yet is cursed to golf forever. It's sort of one of those like, oh, you know, you're going to eat all the donuts because you love donuts until you get sick situation.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know, what do you think y'all would be cursed by?
Oh.
Because for me, it's cereal. I think I would just have way too much cereal.
That's interesting.
Everybody's like rushing to think of something they enjoy.
Well, it's cereal's tough. Mine, right? So like that, it's tough because Russ did take.
Do you think you and I would be cursed to cereal together?
Oh, that would be my hell. You know, it's like for eternity, I've got all the cereal I want. But that sounds like actually more like purgatory now that I say it.
What are those brown? They look like squared off donuts. That cereal, they're like oat, some nonsense. That would be my crackling true oat cereal bran? Hell. What?
Crackling oat bran? Is that? What
yeah, probably.
Called?
Ugh.
Ugh, it is a, that's a
cereal hell right there. Cursed to cereal.
Cursed I think it would probably be like watching like foreign films. You know, well, not foreign films, just art house movies where it's like, oh, you know what? It's really fun watching Paris, Texas, but like afterwards, you don't want to do it again.
Or maybe they're all like very poorly dubbed.
Oh, that would be like the kind of the monkey paw twist, right? That yep. I get to watch anime for as long as I want, but it's all like
terrible,
really
dubs.
Bad all dubs.
I can't stand it when it's a dub.
Really?
I like it.
There are
way,
good dubs.
There's no. I have to have. I don't like this intro. I don't like who it's made us.
Griffin, what brings you joy so we can twist it into something horrible?
You guys are describing doing a thing you like forever. That's heaven. We have a name for it, okay? He's not cursed to golf. He's having a great time golfing with all his friends. And when he's done golfing, he golfs some more. It's amazing. The whole thing is a failed state. It's a flawed premise, and I think they should be forced to give refunds in the Steam store. Blessed to golf. Blessed to golf.
Blessed to golf. Thank you.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy. I know the best game of the week.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Russ Frostick, and I know the best game of the week.
Hello, welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. This week, a lovely new little game called Cursed to Golf. A great title, but Chris Plant, what is that title describing?
Cursed to Golf is a golf roguelike where you golf across 18 dungeons that are very large. They're not like normal golf courses, and the way that you get to the end is by hitting little totems that give you extra hits, and there are special cards, and we'll talk about it all after the break.
Stay tuned for that, and so much more. I was playing this game. I'm not going to have as much talk. I was playing this game, and the main thought that I kept having while I was playing it was like, man, I bet those other besties really, really are going wild for this one. It's like a golf spelunky where you get to watch a little turd die over and over again. I know that makes you, that just drives you all wild with delight, is watching some little guy pie get his just desserts ad infinitum, like a spelunky, and then the, what's the one you like?
With Binding
the
of Isaac.
Fetus, yeah, Binding of Isaac. And those games like that is very much in the spirit, but then our most boring sport is layered on top of it. I bet you guys are just going hog wild for this one.
Yeah, this is very much scratching an itch for me that I think maybe
didn't know
not
existed.
Everyone.
It's like you had a third foot that got an itch on it. You're like, whoa, that is nice.
Surprise foot. Yeah, it is a wild combination of those roguelike and golf in a way that I was not expecting them to go as hard as they do. Like, this is a very difficult game in the spirit of very difficult roguelikes like Spelunky and stuff like that. And I was not expecting them to come out of the gate so intensely with such high difficulty. And they did. They went for it. They go for it. heart in this game.
So to describe a little bit more of how it works, it's a 2D golf game, which you can only see like a little bit around you. You cannot see like the full course at all times. And you basically need to navigate to a hole that is very, very, very far away. And the way you do that is by obviously hitting the ball. You have three clubs, wedge, iron, and driver. And then you also have cards that give you special powers. So, like, the ball can do a U-turn mid-air, or you can turn it into a rocket and drive it different places, or you can just get extra hits by using a card. And that's the core game. But then there are also alternate paths to the hole, and some of them are much harder or more difficult than others. And if you choose to go after them, you'll be rewarded if you pull the shot off, but you'll be extremely punished if you miss the shot. Because, again, very limited on the number of shots that you have at any time.
There is very little room for error.
I think we've talked about sort of Super Stickman Golf, a game that we have been obsessed with in its many variation. What is it now? Golf Blitz? Is that what Noodle
Cake
went on
to make? Yeah, I think that's the latest one.
Which is to say, it's like a 2D golf game, which inherently doesn't have like a lot of, when you remove one of the dimensions from golf, it reduces the complexity of the sport dramatically, I would say. But this game, you know, gets around it in the same way that those noodle cake games do, where you have these cards that give you different sort of shots and different abilities. There's like a card that stops your ball in midair and makes it just drop right where it is. And then there's a U-turn card that lets you switch sort of the direction of your ball. And there's all kinds of these like special abilities that you kind of have to use in order to get through the courses, because the courses are, each hole is like enormous. It is not traditional by any stretch of the imagination. We're talking about like 10 to 20 shots to get through each hole, I would say, on average.
I was viewing them more, I think, as like a power-up, you know, that you would see in these traditional games when you just need a little boost. But it's really more of a like problem-solving, puzzle-solving type thing where, like, to give you an example, there'll be a shortcut, but the shortcut is blocked by TNT. So you can use one of your cards to blow up the TNT, because there's like a TNT dynamite exploding card. They also explode when you hit them, but you can save yourself a shot that way, right? So you can blow that up, and then, but your arc of your shot isn't going to be exactly right to get down through that shortcut. So you have to use, something that stops time and then makes your ball just like fall down the hole to get to the shortcut. So you're like planning these routes and then using the cards to like use your sneaky little route that you wanted to use.
Yeah, it's Griffin, it's funny that you mentioned, you know, by removing the dimension, there's less complexity to it. I actually might feel differently because if you think about like Hot Shots Golf, for example, 3D golf game, been around forever. When I play that game, it's like a meditative, like zone out kind of game, because effectively every hole is going to play out pretty similarly. You're, you know, driver to fairway to wedge to whatever to putting. And you know, in this game, you can't do that because it's a game effectively about angles and making sure that you have the right, like, you know, angle to make the next shot. It's almost like pool in that way. So there's like a lot, it feels like there's a lot more planning in this game than there would be in like a 3D traditional golf game.
Yeah, I understand that. It's it's so bizarre the way that this game does golf that it weirdly is, it does not scratch that itch that you described, Justin. Like, I love a golfing RPG, but the way that you maneuver through these holes, each hole is like a maze with different routes that you can take through. And you know, some of them have these like statuettes that you have to smash in order to get additional shots added to your shot counter, because if that ever runs out, you die and your run is over. And so it's like, okay, do I go through this, you know, more straightforward path that has a silver idol that's going to give me two extra shots, or do I burn some of my cards to go through this harder path that I might not even be able to get through, but then I get four extra shots added to my total? And those considerations are, I think, give the game the complexity that it needs, but it also, like, it it, I don't know. I found myself at times just kind of wanting to play golf.
There are a lot of games that do that.
Yeah. No, it is. There's weird stuff with, like, the camera is so tight that you can't really see where your shot is going to go typically, which is like another layer of difficulty that feels artificial because this is a two-dimensional game. So, like, you would be able to see, like, the, it's very arbitrary that you can't see further than you can. You can, like, pan around, but you can't do that in combination with your, like, shot arc.
Yeah, I found myself, like, trying to abuse the system a little bit by, okay, if the arrow, like, I was trying to, like, use the edges of the screen to, like, almost make invisible markers for myself to try to figure out where the ball is going to go after I hit it. And that does feel forced in a way that it just kind of shouldn't. I realize why it's there. It's probably a design decision to make the game a little more challenging.
Yeah.
But it feels just a little forced on that front. I do like tonally, you know, most golf games lack any tone at all.
Yeah.
This game goes for like a cartoony, you know, representation of purgatory where there's these like bosses that you face, and they've got like boss fights where you do like a match, like a stroke play against or a match play against them.
Those are fun, by the way. It's not, yeah, they're, I like those where you're like competing against another person. It lets you balance between like distance and using your cards because you're not only burning through shots, you're also trying to keep ahead of the other player.
Yeah, those are some of the hardest parts of the game later on, just because there's so little room for error and you're trying to like stay ahead of this other person. But I just like the fact that like they're all, you know, the first guy you face is like a Scottish, I forget his name, but he's
the Scotsman.
The Scotsman, right? There you go.
So close.
And it's just like a very goofy representation of like a variety of ghosts that you might face in a golf themed purgatory. And each area, I think there's four areas in total, has their own like little boss fight character to introduce you to. They also mix up the gameplay a bit because each of the areas, even though it's one 18-hole course, it's kind of split up so that there are themes. So the first theme is kind of like a temple jungle theme, and then you kind of go into like more like Sahara desert dunes kind of theme. So they definitely mix up what you're facing.
Yeah. I think it is a very, very cool idea. And I think that when you think of a golf, I think a golf roguelike in this style is a hard thing to kind of figure out. And so a lot of these mechanics, like, you know, the cards and the shot counter and the not being able to see everything all of the time, all kind of goes hand in hand to build out the challenge of it. Because I think you could remove some of those things and the game would be like dead simple.
Yeah.
So I understand that stuff, but I also I don't know. It didn't really click for me in the way that I was hoping it would.
For me, it has the very classic roguelike fun graph, which is like in most games that are not roguelikes, they start out as fun as possible, as early as possible, but then they drop off. And after like 10 or 12 hours, you're like, well, I've seen what I'm here to see. I'm just getting the same feeling over and over again. What I like about roguelikes, but what makes them very difficult, is that I feel like they're the least amount of fun at the beginning and for like hours as you figure out what the game is and you figure out if it's fair and you figure out what type of strategy you want to use for it. And then deep into the game, you're suddenly playing for, you know, like dozens, hundreds of hours, sometimes in the case of Frustix, you know, Binding of Isaac. And I think that this game has that. I'm not far enough to say for certain that it will get to be that rewarding, but the more I play, the more I do like it.
It could be a little more rewarding for the beginning. I mean, I really like Hades was fun the first time I played it. And this is, has nothing to do with Hades, but like it is the same structure. So like I just wanted it to be a little bit more fun early. I mean, like I played for 4 hours before I got like in four holes deep. Like I was like, it was brutal. Like I just made it to the first boss, like right before we started recording. I beat him. Thanks. But like, I just wish it would give you a little bit more like a little bit easier, ramp up a little bit slower, so you could kind of feel like you're getting the hang of it, because there's a lot of stuff that I had to, like not holding on to cards and the importance of using spin, which you basically need to use on like every shot to kind of get it where you need to so you don't end up in a bad position. I wish that it had just like ramped that up a little bit slower, because there's also no sort of like permanent upgrade. There's very few, I will say, permanent like upgrades like you'd see in a lot of modern roguelikes. So it made it like really demoralizing to finish and then like just not have, you know, not feel like I learned much and not have very much progress to show for it. And I was struggling with that for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely tough. And I understand, especially for people that like aren't into the more traditional roguelike structure of a game like Binding of Isaac, where you aren't unlocking advantages as you play, as you do in a game like Hades. And I can definitely see why people kind of get turned off by that. For me, the roguelike thing has always been about like, I'm going to learn these systems. And because I'm going to know the system so well, every decision that I'm making early on will then pay off later on, where I'll have this huge advantage build up because I know everything that's going on and I'm spending the cards in the right way, such that like I got to hole 9 or so and I had like 50 cards built up in my collection because I just knew when to use them versus when not to use them and was just doing very well. It's extremely tough to balance a game like this, because you're trying to balance for like me, who gets really hardcore into it, and then someone else who's like, oh, I'm just going to play like a casual golf game, where every single shot that you're doing early on, if you screw it up, will punish you in some way later on because you don't have that card available or that resource. So it can be very daunting for people. So I totally understand why people might bounce off of it.
Russ, but I feel like you've been pushed into a position on this episode where you're like defending against our individual points. And I'd love to hear just like your, as somebody who I feel like this is probably closest to your individual wheelhouse, like how is it clicking for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the points that you bring up, especially about the like not feeling like I'm getting it, don't necessarily apply to me just because I was...
That is the nicest way anybody has ever said, I'm better at video games than you.
I mean,
truly, I feel like I'm in realistically third grade. But it's like a classy third grade, very elegant.
I wasn't hitting that wall that you were hitting, such that I was feeling like I was constantly making progress, where I'd get like two or three holes further than I had on the previous run. I agree with Griffin's point, or whoever said it, about the viewing angle stuff. It is frustrating to like not have full clear visibility into where exactly the ball is going to go. But I think mechanically overall, like I find it very satisfying. Like I'll be in a situation where I know I can spend one card. Maybe it's like the practice shot card where I'm going for like a statue to like increase my stroke total. I can spend one card and get this huge advantage if I play the hole right, or if I play the shot exactly right, that I wouldn't have normally. And that huge advantage kind of paces me ahead of where the game thinks I might be at that time, so that maybe the next hole is a lot easier, or I get a bunch of currency that I can buy even more cards. I find it very satisfying. There are elements of the golf, like mechanically, that I think could be sharper, but I think the minute-to-minute like decision-making feels very true to the roguelike formula in a way that like it's kind of incredible that they managed to merge those two with golf. It is a bizarre, very creative attempt at it that might maybe gets a little more creative than it needs to be, but overall I really dig it.
I feel like they it's interesting. I feel like a lot of our complaints here are not necessarily like would not necessarily surprise the makers of this game. I feel like there are a lot of decisions in this game that feel like it was made to be loved deeply and not widely necessarily. Like there's a lot of stuff they could have done to make this more accessible, but like the people that it did hook, I don't think it would hook them as deep as this. I suspect will for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Y'all, we have a full mailbag. Want to go empty it on the other side?
Yes. Yeah, I'll start untying it and then we'll just dump it out.
Okay, we're back. I've got the mailbag. I have poured it onto the floor. I'm getting thousands of paper cuts and blood everywhere. But no. I've got great questions. I picked some that are, I think, just for each of you. The first one, you'll never guess who this one's for. This one is from Ethan. Has Fortnite peaked? Russ Frush.
Mm. Didn't they just add Goku?
Fucking Goku is in it now.
So what a ridiculous question. They well, just
is that,
added
maybe that
Goku.
Is peaking, right?
Could, that might be peaking.
That might prove your point, Griffin.
I don't know.
Where do you Goku's go from Goku? So
It peaks. Vegeta? It peaks with Buckaroo Banzai. Like once they add Buckaroo Banzai, truly there will be no
once
more.
Once they
worlds to
they
conquer.
Find the audience of 50 years and older, it'll really peak. Is what you're saying?
I was watching. I mentioned last time watching a lot of John Carpenter movies. Mm. Let's fucking get Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little China into Fortnite. How great would that be? Get
I mean,
Kurt
that's the
there,
thing is like there
dialogue.
Doesn't seem to be. Any line that they won't cross from like a cross, like they just added RoboCop recently. Like RoboCop Robert hasn't Cop. Had a movie. Oh, I guess they did that terrible reboot.
You got to call him Robert Cop. You guys aren't close enough.
Robert,
to call him
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Robert Cop. They added Robert Cop. I mean, he hasn't had a, well, I guess they did that reboot, which is bad. But generally speaking, like this was the retro 80s RoboCop that they added. So they are hitting both the like, kids that like the various things that kids like, and also people for the olds like us.
All kids love RoboCop. It's intuitive and instinctual. It's
my
a man
kid's
who's
scared
a robot
of RoboCop.
Cop, like kids love RoboCop.
Your kid's scared of him?
Yeah, he's kind of a scary guy.
He's not real. RoboCop ain't real.
Well, wait. It's because you showed him the actual movie RoboCop. and that was a little too violent for his taste.
A little to that. When ED-209 like blast that board room, Banner was losing it, man. He loved that.
Somebody call an ambulance.
Fortnite has a mini, I just want to say this, has a mini ED-209 that you ride around like a little pet dog. You ride on his back.
Fortnite, yeah, that's where you Fortnite's have to give Fortnite at. Credit for always making the, almost every single time, Fort makes the funnest possible choice with
they
almost
do.
No accountability towards anything, like propriety, physics, anything. Fortnite just does the dumbest, funnest thing it can think of at any given time. It's amazing. It's like dumping a big cube of action figures out and just be like, I don't know, and Spider-Man gets a lightsaber. You know what I mean? It's like, it's amazing. What a delight.
Yeah. I don't think you can like say Fortnite peaked. It's only a thing you'll know after it's happened. Because it's like, you know, counting out touchdown Tom Brady or saying like, you know, is Zelda done? You know, can Zelda get any better? And then it always, you know, then you get Breath of the Wild and you're like, I guess it can.
Yeah.
Then it gets worse.
Wow. Oh, wow.
No, I love Breath of the Wild. I'm just saying like, Zelda as a franchise is not on an ever improving arc.
That is true. It's had ebbs and flows.
This is from Rachel. If you could only recommend one video game to someone, what would it be?
What a wild one.
Fuck, that's good.
Yeah, well, actually, Justin...
I know nothing about the person, right?
Yes, and I will say, because I want you to have the room to get both these answers, Kate asked a similar question, but targeted it to you, Justin, with, if I wanted to dip my toe into FMV world, what game should I start with? So, Justin, if you have two answers, that's acceptable.
Yeah, I would not recommend an FMV game, as much as I love them, would not be the game that I would, like, recommend to all people.
I got mine.
Okay.
What's yours?
Because I think I said this when we were talking about this game a lot. I think I would recommend Curse of the Obra Dinn to anyone.
Mm.
Really? I think that, I don't know that it would, it's not the most accessible game, but it is the most, like, rewarding and clever game that I think I've ever played, and I think that that is universal in a way that people would groove with.
And it's accessible in the sense that, like, you don't need, like, elite skills,
no.
Like, you're just moving around a 3D space, so
yeah.
It's, like, pretty simple. That's a good pick. I like that pick.
Mine is just another golf game, because I think golf games are kind of the perfect thing to recommend. Everybody knows how they work immediately, and that's Desert Golfing.
That's a good example of a golf game. I was going to say, some golf games get pretty complicated, but Desert Golfing has very little going on.
Yeah, you could hand it to anybody, and they would lose a few hours, no matter who they are.
I think that's fair. I would probably go with Journey, which is a game that I've talked about previously, but Journey, I think, encapsulates the spirit and magic of like AAA high entertainment games in a way that is like super approachable. There's no real, like, there's like one button you have to worry about. There's no dialogue. It's just like, we're going to walk you through this environment and you're going to have an amazing, like, cinematic experience doing it. Yeah, I could hand that game to anyone. They'd probably be pretty overjoyed.
I think I'd probably go with Minecraft.
Oh, interesting.
It's just like, it's satisfying on a basic level, but like, if you want to get, if you want to do other stuff, you can do other stuff, but it definitely like serves. I'm trying to keep my wife in mind because she's not a huge game player. But even Minecraft was something where you could like turn on together and just kind of like work on a little house or project or whatever. I think the reach of Minecraft backs me up a little bit in terms of like broad appeal.
But
I think
you think they're doing okay?
They're doing all right.
Yeah.
Justin, if somebody did want to get into FMVs, what would your game be?
Probably Her Story. I mean, I know that's a little bit cliched, Her Story is...
It's cheating because that's a good one. Like, it feels like...
Interesting.
I feel like if you're trying to get somebody into FMVs, you should give them a more representative cross-section of the genre.
I mean, if you... I honestly, if I'm answering this personally, and I think that Griffin will probably agree with me on this, I think that if I was trying to do, like, the best to get you excited about it, I would probably go with... Her Story. Sorry, I just said it. But like, if I, I know it's just said it a second ago. But if I wanted to like give you like an actual representation of like what is good about these, it's got to be Contradiction. I mean, like Contradiction is probably my favorite FMV game. It's Griffin. You remember that fucking wild joint, right?
Contradiction. When did it come out?
It's we played it together. The guy asked all the. It's an FMV game by a music composer named Tim Fallon, who, like, you go person to person, and you're asking them questions, and it's all FMV, the entire thing's FMV. There's almost no interface, and you're, like, you can ask people about whatever, so there's a lot of scenes of, like, well-meaning British actors trying to explain why they don't know about someone's bike. Remember the bike, Griffin?
Yeah, like, okay, now I remember.
What do you think about this bike? And he asked everyone a different way, like, this bike, what are we thinking about it? What do you think of this bike? And like, three-fourths of people are like, I don't know, it's a bike. It's so funny. I love Contradiction. There's many like better ones, I guess, probably, but like you want to talk about the one that delights me is everything I love about FMV, it's Contradiction.
One more question. This one's from Graham. Have you tried your Steam Deck plugged into a monitor or TV? Can it effectively replace a gaming PC? Have any of you tried that yet?
The dock's not out yet, right?
Yeah, dock's not out. So you have to do it with like a third-party dock or what is it? But, you know, one of those things that lets you plug a whole bunch of different USB.
Yeah, like a USB hub.
Yeah.
No, I have not done that.
I have not either. I feel like if you're using it to game on a monitor, you would only be able to do it with, like, 2D pixely games because the second you're trying to run anything 3D, it's probably going to have to run at, like, 720p to run well. And that's not going to look great on like a big TV.
Yeah, I've used it and it works fine in a pinch. And I say that even as a graphics snob. But Fresh is right. You will notice that it does not look great. That said, if like if your current experience is an original Xbox One and an original PlayStation 4, you could fuss with the settings and it probably would look pretty comparable. But yeah, I personally think it looks much, 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 much better in handheld mode. And I don't think it's quite there yet.
I mean, I've basically found myself, I haven't hooked it up to a monitor, but I'll just use it in handheld and really like make a lot of use out of the cloud saving for when I want to like play on something on a big screen. I'll just like switch to my laptop. I realize not everyone has another computer in the house that could play games, but that's been my go-to.
Okay. Honorable mentions.
I went out for the first time on like an evening date with my wife since our child was born. It's been like a year and a couple months. That was very nice. We had a nice night out. We went to Forest Hills Stadium and saw some live comedy with Bill Burr and Keith Robinson performed. And I don't know, man, getting out and like doing stuff makes a huge difference. Forest Hills Stadium, for what it's worth, was the original stadium where the U.S. Open was held, the tennis U.S. Open. It's this like very cool throwback to like another era of like, I don't know, New York, where it's just like this retro venue that doesn't feel modern at all, but also has like, you know, modern amenities, food and stuff like that. But it was just like a really nice thing. And it was good to see live comedy again. I haven't seen that in years face to face. So it was just like a really delightful night out. Do yourself a favor. Leave the house. That's my recommendation.
I've still been playing Pokemon Go. Still pretty cool. We've been going to a lot of playgrounds here in DC, and each one has a gym, and the gyms are filled with children's idiot Pokemon.
Here's my Chansey. Yeah, hey, buddy, I put my Chansey up.
They have a lot of health.
Not when my Machamp gets in there and does them so fucking dirty. It's so satisfying to just trounce little kids' Pokemons that you know that they put in there. It's a cool game. There's this like, there's always an event going, which I don't think I appreciated about Pokemon Go. There's always like some sort of like themed thing going on. Like for the last week, it was this bug themed event where more bug Pokemon spawned, and there were like quests about catching specific bug Pokemon, and then like super powerful bug Pokemon spawned in all the raids, and we tore up the town. It was good time.
Hoops, how about you?
It's just the same stuff. Still playing that Point P. It's a really cute little mobile thing. Between this and next week, I've been basically just those two games.
Did you realize week. You can't talk about something that we're going to be playing later?
I mean, you can. You could say that we're playing it.
Yeah, well, Saints Row is that's next week's thing. And I've been playing a lot of that because it's a big thing.
Yeah. I've been playing Gigabash, which is like Power Stone meets kaiju battles in cities, destructible cities. Griffin, we should try to make some time to play it. I feel like I should love this game, and I'm like pretty mixed on it, but tons of people love it. Tons of people keep recommending it to me because they understand, yes, this is a very Chris Plant game. I find the single player pretty frustrating. And I'm wondering if, like, hey, that's just some balancing issues. And if I got into more multiplayer, I would really, really click with it. So I'm going to keep picking at it. I wanted to share it just because I think there are a lot of people out there, and by a lot, I mean like 5 to 6, who are looking for that Power Stone fill in their life. And this is close. It's very charming. I
like the name.
Maybe some balancing issues.
Griffin, have you gotten into... I was going to ask you guys if Griffin or Plant, either of you guys played... Or Freshtick, I guess, played Rollerdrome.
I was going to ask about that.
Roll 7 thing?
It's not out yet. I think it comes out like today or tomorrow when we're recording.
Looks fun.
But I haven't played it, but I hear it's excellent.
Yeah, it looks superb.
No, I love it. No, I love Roll 7.
It's a 3D, 3D rollerblading game where you are shooting people. And you have to do tricks to reload your weapons.
It kind of has like a 1970s sci-fi action movie aesthetic.
Fuck yes. Oh, man, yeah. I'm looking at a trailer now. This looks hot as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks gorgeous. Got great reviews. And it's kind of crazy because Roll 7 just, you know, a few months ago.
Ollie World, right?
Yeah. Ollie World, which is also really well received. They're having quite the year.
They are such a good developer. Like, they make way different shit, and it's almost always like super duper fun. Do you guys remember Not a Hero?
I don't know their other stuff beyond the Ali Ali franchise.
So they had a game called Not a Hero, which was like this run based like John Woo style action game that was like 2D pixel art, and you just had to like chart a course through these buildings, like jumping and sliding and shooting, and like it was very slick and run based, just like Ollie Ollie World was.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was a good as hell game.
Wanted to thank the following people for writing reviews for the Besties on Apple Podcasts. We have EXZD, I guess is how you...
Holy shit.
EXZISD. I don't know how to pronounce
you
that.
You pull these names, right?
Yeah, I guess I should have written phonetically.
Just look up for Daves. Just find the Daves.
That's true. Might be Pag Kahari and Barkle. Thank you for writing reviews for the Besties. Thank you to everyone else who wrote reviews for the Besties and has shared the show on Twitter or various other places. Really appreciate it. It makes a big difference for us, I know.
Here are the games we talked about this week. Cursed to Golf, Minecraft, Journey, Return of the Oprah Din, Desert Golfing, Her Story, Contradiction, Pokemon Go, The Very Idea of Going Outside, Pointy, Gigabash, and Roller Dome. And next week, we're talking about Saints Row, not Saints Row 1 from, 2013, Saints Row 2022. It's a reboot. It is, I would say, more tasteful. But still a little like, ooh, yeah,
a little spicy.
We will talk about that and whatever super old tennis place Fresh Stick went to and so much more next week on the Besties, because should the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Besties!